I'm not looking at making people better something. They are perfect as they are. The idea is just revealing to themselves their own perfection, reconnecting with their own qualities that is already here.
As a leader, have you ever asked yourself what you're doing? You know, questioned the roles that you're required to adopt, wondered about the behaviours you're expected to display? Eric Legal knows this kind of thinking very well. Despite being successful in his own career, he had just those kind of thoughts, and in looking for answers, he found himself increasingly drawn to the teachings of Buddhism and mindfulness. He left the world of business to pursue greater understanding of Buddhism, eventually becoming recognized as a lama or spiritual leader. He then went back into business because becoming a Buddhist did not make him want to eschew the world of work and business. Rather, he found he wanted to help. And these days, Eric is a leadership coach, and he works with people who are dealing with just those feelings I mentioned earlier. And in his coaching, he draws upon the insights and wisdom he gains from Buddhism. It's an approach that's not so much about helping leaders directly find solutions, but it's more about helping leaders to find and get back in touch with themselves. Eric spoke with me recently from rural France, where he's in lockdown, and I started by asking him to describe what it is that generally draws people to seek coaching from him.
Most of the people who come to see me or are attracted by my profile and come to see me because they are in the middle of a turmoil at one point of their life. And it's quite diverse in terms of age. It's not only people of 50 asking themselves what they will do for the end of their career, as we would think about this kind of questioning, but it can be also very young people in their 20s or mid-20s. And they are in the middle of a turmoil when they are seeking a place where, or a situation, professional situation, where they don't live by the values they cherish for themselves. Yes, the values and the meaning of their life. And they find a kind of, and what is very common in most of the people I coach or I work with is that they are living an episode in their life of duality, where they think that there is themselves as a professional and themselves as their authentic people they are, and they are a little bit, most of them are lost to understand, but who am I this person I am at work when I lead people or when I manage people, or even with people who are not specifically managers, but are in a profession, have a certain way of behaving or being, and they have the impression that they are a completely different person. And it can be a question they have when they are very young, when they are thinking about what there will be their future career and how they can match the authentic person they are with what they want to do. Or people who have been away from themselves for 20 years or more sometimes, and having the impression that they have lost themselves in their professional path. I'm also a meditation teacher, and I teach just mindfulness, not necessarily for leaders, but just that. And I have the impression that most of the people come to understand about and practice, start the practice of mindfulness, not just for stress reduction, because it's not the way I present it, but because they are in the middle of struggling with this kind of duality in their life and trying to find a path of better understanding who they are and getting rid of their duality and going more back to their authentic people that they have the impression of being.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the phrase that is in my mind as you describe the place of the people you work with are finding themselves is that they are not being true to themselves.
Yes, something like that. And it brings a lot of questioning about who am I, who are they, who they are. And so that's why they are not looking only for a traditional kind of coaching, which would be understanding what are their strengths, where are their abilities, what are their talents. But they are willing to go deeper in understanding who am I? Who am I in the core of soul, as we can say it. For Buddhists, there is no soul, but who they are as at the deepest of themselves. Or can they reconnect to a kind of and they are in the middle of a kind of spiritual questioning, which is not only seeking to reconnect with their talents, qualities, and image of themselves, but going deeper and trying to fix this kind of deeper duality.
Right. Before we get into how you actually coach, Eric, I wonder if you could share with us your own spiritual and leadership journey.
Yes, and it's an interesting question because I think that my journey reflects and is a mirror of the journey of the people I am coaching. And it's certainly my history also is one of the reasons why people contact me. I've been exactly through this kind of path. That means that when I was young, I had a deep questioning about, philosophical questioning about, who am I? Why am I here? Why am I living certain things and not others? And why is life as it is and not another way? And then my studies, I started to go to business school and to think about my professional life, etc. And I got it a little bit apart in my life. I let it take a side of my life. And then I went to business school and I graduated and I worked for a little bit more than 10 years in companies in finance, controlling, marketing, sales, etc. I started to see around 5 or 6 years after I started my professional life to see that I was always having a sense of disappointment, not being fully happy of my condition as an executive, and always looking for the next professional position or the next opportunity to be the one that would bring me what I was looking for, without knowing what I was looking for deeply. And then after something like 8 to 9 years, I had a crisis, which was, okay, it's becoming, I'm too much a side of myself. There's too much duality between who I am and what I am looking at as a leader, as a manager. And I started to look at alternatives and how to reconnect to my spiritual questioning and find a path and a journey. And I discovered Buddhism at that time. And I spent more and more time going to meditation retreats, seminars about Buddhist teachings. And it took more and more place in my life in parallel of my professional life. And at what point of time, another episode of professional difficulties due to constant restructuring, etc., came, and I said, okay, I don't want to spend more time in that, and I want to go to take a part of my life, maybe several years. I didn't know how much it would take for deep questioning. And the Buddhist path was very interesting for me. So I quitted everything and I settled in a Buddhist center in the French Alps, where I stayed for 7 years in total, of which I spent 3.5 years in a meditation isolated retreat.
Wow.
Traditional The traditional meditation retreat of 3 years and 3 months that we find in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition.
And this is an isolation retreat, but it's not solitary, is it? I mean, am I right, you were with other people?
Yes, we were in a group of 9 people all together. So we had times alone and times in a group meditation or group rituals, only men. There were women who were doing the same retreat in the same time as us, but in another place, and completely isolated, and without the possibility to get out or to go out, to exit from the retreat center. It means that for years you are locked down, as we are, like we are at the moment, and with people you have not necessarily chosen to be with, which is also part of the journey, dealing with all the difficulties it can be.
And can I check, it's not a silent retreat, is it? Like, say, some people might think of a monk doing.
No, it's not absolutely silent. We can talk, but there is not a lot of social interaction in the end, because we don't have time for that. We spend something like 15 hours a day in meditation. So when we meditate, we don't talk. But it's the best way to go deep in the art of meditation, because it's a little bit more than 1,000 days, 15 hours a day, without holidays, without nothing, without pause. So that means that certainly more than 15,000 hours of meditation without having to be worried of anything outside of your practice. And it's very comfortable. You are like a professional meditator. Everything is taken care of. And it's a good way. So sometimes we say that to be able to master, to have a good command of an art, you require 10,000 hours of practice. The Japanese even say it's 30,000 hours, but let's say 10,000, we say in the West. So it means that it's the time needed for starting to master what is meditation. So that was it. And when I exited from a retreat in 2014, the question came to ask, that I asked myself was, what do I want to do now? What would be my purpose now? And I wanted to have the possibility to share what I've learned, what I've practiced with others. And it was my main wish to share as much as I could, because I had the feeling that many people were needing this kind of depth of questioning and depth of trying to find answers and depth of reconnecting themselves with their own nature, with the nature of their mind, with a deep understanding of their life. So the question came. Then I decided that the best place where I would be, the easiest place where I could share, would be in the professional world, in the business world. And I didn't think about leadership at the beginning. It came as a consequence. But in the business world in general, and in the workplace in specifically. Because I saw more and more that the business, the workplace was generating a lot of difficulties with more and more burnout, more and more problems like that of people who are completely lost in their job. And so I had the impression that I could help, because it helped me. Even if I was extreme in the way my path was, by quitting everything and practicing intensively for 3.5 years, nevertheless, I could share that without going the extreme I went, just by introducing a little bit more of being more mindful of of who people are and what they live, etc. And then I started an INSEAD program, which is the Executive Master in Consulting and Coaching for Change, which is not a certification coaching program, but is more something that goes deeper in reflection, with the aim of creating reflective leaders. And I decided to do it because I thought I have to develop my own genuine, original tools, not use the tools that have been developed by others. And I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know what would be the methodology. And I thought I need to learn a little bit more about the psychological part and how people change and what are all those things and how I can help people. And this program was great because it helped me to develop my own tools, which was the aim of the master.
How long was that course?
It was a little bit more than a year and a half, and it is part time. That means that it was something like 5 days every other month. Then I started my business as a coach. My own firm, and I implemented the tools I've developed, which was the subject of my thesis, my master thesis, which is called Contemplative Leadership Coaching. The idea is to use the basis of mindfulness practice as well as views on Buddhist psychology, how Buddhism sees psychology, and hold together with a way to coach people using this and going very deep in the existential and spiritual questioning. And it can be as at the same time useful for just a very precise and problem at one point of time, or more general in re-questioning more of their professional career, and even deeper sometimes than just the professional career.
Now, when you began coaching, Eric, and you let the world know that you were offering something that was very much based in mindfulness and Buddhism, and that might appear very different to the kind of coaching people would find elsewhere, I mean, what kind of reaction did you get?
I think I have the chance of being at the right time. That means 10 years ago, I would have been considered as a complete weird kind of misfit coach. But now the mindfulness is in all the headlines, you know, and in the press. It's not a week without an article saying about the benefits of mindfulness meditation and of everything, and even in the professional press like Harvard Business Review or Fortune, or there is a lot of publications. So there is a way to surf, and it's becoming more and more mainstream. And something I always say is that when I started meditating, and I was a little bit cautious about who I talked about that, because it was appearing a little bit weird 10 years ago, right? And even I say 10 years ago, in the Silicon Valley, if you were saying that you were meditating, you were looked at someone a little bit strange. But no, if it's the reverse. If you are saying that you are not meditating, that you are seen as a weird person, and so I think it's becoming the right time.
But of course, you're not a therapist, though, are you? I mean, you're not seeking to help people who have, you know, mental health issues or serious psychological problems.
No, it's I would say it's a therapy for people who are going well, generally speaking. That means that I'm not talking about a huge disturbance, a huge problem of huge psychological disorders, but with just people who are questioning themselves, were just having a discomfort at one point of their life with maybe their emotions, with maybe the way they behave socially versus who they are deeply, maybe things, very ordinary things, in fact, which we quite universal. And it's a therapy for people who are going well, if I say.
Yeah. I mean, what you're talking about there reminds me rather of the work of Martin Seligman. I don't know if you've heard of him. He wrote a book back in 2004, I think it was, called Authentic Happiness. And his focus was very much on what he calls positive psychology, which is like the study of the strengths and virtues that enable individuals and communities to thrive.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I have a lot of people who come to me because they are happy, or they have the impression of being globally happy. But there is always something that is a little bit problematic within this happiness. There is a kind of missing something, of lacking something. It's like a little bit of sand in the shoe, you know. It's okay, the shoe is comfortable, but you have a little bit of a feeling of discomfort.
Well, walk us through what happens then. I call you up and we make an appointment, fix the time to meet. And so what can I expect?
Generally, we talk. We talk a lot. I have my own method and tools, but I don't use them as something that is really strict and framed.
Right. So you don't follow a sort of, you know, like a fixed process. You don't say, well, these are the steps we're going to go through, 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, specifically like that.
No, it's not that. Because my experience is that when we do that, we miss too much of the person. And starting a coaching with someone is like opening a door into a dark room. I don't know what I will find there. What would come out of this questioning or of this interaction I will have with them. I'm confident with my tools. I know them, but I don't know how I will use them or if I will use all of them. I don't know at all. So it's really free, and I try to have free-floating kind of interaction with the people, very free. And sometimes quite brief, it can be just 20 minutes. The idea is not to fix problems, but to open doors to more reflection. I'm not here to give a path to resolution or to finding a solution to a problem, but to open new doors to new thinking. And sometimes, and it's quite common, people don't really get it from the time we discussed together. And then they come a month or 2 months after and say, "Ah, yes, you know, you told me this last time or a few months ago, and I didn't realize, but it made me think." But there is a constant, which is we start by meditating together for a few minutes. Depend of who is who, if they have a large experience or not of meditation, but between 5 to 15 minutes, and then we start a very free dialogue, and then we'll see how it evolves.
And does it have to be done face to face?
It's preferable that we meet in flesh for the first time, for the first meeting. Then we have a better connection. And then we can do everything else by Skype or Zoom or whatever. But it's better. But nevertheless, sometimes I have people who are far away or far away from me. So we do everything through Zoom or Skype. Uh-huh. It works okay. It's not a huge problem.
Do you have an example that you could share?
Yes, so I worked recently with a lawyer, a business lawyer, and he came to me because he had a feeling of losing the sense of what he was doing, the meaning, the deep sense of his motivation, in fact, of being a lawyer. And he was thinking again and again, maybe I should quit, maybe I should do something else, maybe I should orient my life to do something else. So we started to work together in order to understand what was the problem here. And we discovered together that the main issue was around conflictual emotions he had, and a specific conflictual emotion, which was anger and aggression and kind of violence in the way he was talking to people in certain situations.
So he was getting inappropriately angry with people at work?
Yes, and specifically when he was in court. And then he decided not to plea anymore in court, not to go anymore in court, and just being a legal counsel and working with files and setting up contracts and not working anymore in court. And
because he couldn't trust himself.
Yeah, exactly. He was afraid of being in a situation where he would be verbally violent with his opponent or with a judge, and because he had these kind of problems in the past. So he decided, okay, I cannot do it anymore. And discovering that, we discovered that he left what he liked more in his job, which was being in the court and being in the debate with the judge and with the opponent party, etc. His mission in life was to defend people, and he could not defend anymore. He was just in the contracts and in giving legal advice. So we work with this emotion, which is the emotion of aggression, the emotion of anger, and trying to unveil what was behind that. And it's one of the parts of my methodology, which is named wisdom in emotions, which means that behind every kind of emotional conflict, conflictual emotion, there is a good quality. In French, what we say is we say that we have the flows of our qualities and the qualities of our flows, which means that behind every flow or every here specifically emotion, there is a wisdom behind, there is a good quality, an awakened quality behind. And typically with people experiencing anger, violence, aggression, hate even, in fact there is an underlying wisdom of clarity. That means that it's people who see the problem clearly. That means that when you present a case, a situation to someone, it's the guy who will say, yes, but here you have a problem. But they have the impression that they are the only one to see the problem, or that the problem is too big and they cannot solve it. And then they want to destroy it. They want to get rid of it. They want to fight it. And the idea here is to go back to their wisdom and to see that they can use their clarity, their clear mind, their awareness in order to find a way to solve the problem rather than fight it or wanting to destroy it, which leads to all the conflictual emotion of violence and aggression, etc. By doing that with him, he rediscovered that he could go to the court by working on with his own emotion, by practicing mindfulness, which will help him to unveil all that. And it helped him to be able to go back to court, to be able to debate, sometimes quite harshly, but without falling in the side of being aggressive, behaving with a lot of conflict, being more precise in his arguments, being more, yes, direct and straight to the point with his argument, using his basic quality. And at the end, he found back the love of his work, the love of his job, the his true mission in life. And that was quite interesting because at the beginning we started with someone who was asking himself very existential questioning about his meaning in life, what he wanted to do, what was important, what he would consider, he used this word, his mission in life. And having the sense of having lost it, and maybe thinking about changing completely his life, to going back, in fact, to rediscovering what he liked in his own job, and refine again the true sense of mission. And so that was very paradigmatic of things that I see currently, which is changing by staying where they are. Not changing by changing everything or getting a revolution in their life, but changing by staying where they are. I'm not looking at making people better something. They are perfect as they are. The idea is just revealing to themselves their own perfection, reconnecting with their own qualities that is already here. Everything that I don't develop things to transform people, but to help them reconnect to who they truly are. What are their true qualities? So that's the thing. Then how I do is, yes, I have techniques, which is linked to what I've learned from meditation, what I've learned from Buddhist psychology and Buddhist philosophy, which is a sense of each time you let go of a problem or you let go of a conflictual emotion, then everything opens and you gain a sense of openness in the situation. It's still conflictual, but there is a different perspective. And from this different perspective, you can reconnect yourself to your own qualities, your own basic qualities that are already here. So I accompany people in order to in two ways. First is better understanding of their dynamics, what is behind their problems, and then of letting go. Learn how to let go of everything, take a break, make a pause, so that it's okay. And with this lawyer, what happens, what he told me, because I've never been to court with him to see how it works, or he is, but is that each time there is, he feels that the anger is booming in himself, he just sits and breathe for 3 seconds or 5 seconds or a minute if he can. And just everything is going down in terms of energy and he's not completely overwhelmed by it. And then he can deal with it and he can find back the clarity and think again about, okay, here there is something going wrong for me and here is maybe a path I can use to make sense of it, to find a solution rather than fight against the problem. Enrich the situation rather than destroy it.
No, right, of course, not correcting, enriching. Yeah, much better word, I get you, right. Well, that really is a great example, Eric, and thank you so much for sharing that. Do you still work with this particular client?
I think he's okay now. I know I have just news from times to times. And he's a person who is becoming a great meditation practitioner. He practices something like an hour of meditation every day, which is quite an achievement because it helps him. That means that he starts his day clear-minded with everything and confident in himself and not... And I just had an information, it was, I don't know, a couple of months ago, that he had again a problem in court, which behaving has been kept by, he's been overwhelmed by one of his emotions, but it was okay at the end. He could even let go of that, not saying, okay, I failed or whatever. Okay, it's just a sense that I continue to I have a path in front of me that is not finished.
And then finally, just for this part of our conversation, do you always work with individuals or do you also sometimes work with groups?
Mainly with individuals for the moment, but I would like to work more with groups. Nevertheless, I do a lot of workshops. So I have two activities. One is three activities. One is coach. One is I do a lot of training with people on emotional intelligence, on mindfulness and leadership, etc. And I am also a teacher in a major business school in France, a teacher of leadership. It's ESSEC Business School in Paris. I would like to go more and more to group coaching, because there is an intelligence of the interaction between people that I like very much, and which is really, I'm not the one who is bringing wisdom to one people, but I like to have this sharing, because everyone has a bit of wisdom in themselves, and they can, the interaction are sometimes very interesting, and they can build a lot on that. More than just being face to face with me. It also helps people not only to rely on me to use the tool I know and work with them, but to use by themselves the tools I propose them. For example, working with emotions or coaching with emotions, if I do it myself with someone, it will help them, right? One point of time. But the interest of working with groups is that I explain them the tool, and then they work by pairs or by three, and they use that tool, which means that they will be able to reuse it when they need it. It's a little bit like giving a fish or learning someone to fish, you know. It's the interest of group coaching. And I would like to have more and more opportunities to do it like that. Because I see that in the long run, in the long term, it's more helpful to people because they make my tools their tools.
That's the end of this episode, but it wasn't the end of my conversation with Eric. From this point, we started to go into some more, as Eric described them, philosophical aspects of his thoughts on leadership and explored such things as the meaning of brilliant sanity and brilliant leadership, as well as talking about authenticity in leadership. And you can hear how the conversation progressed in the next episode of Talking Leaders. If in the meantime you'd like to get in touch with Eric, his email address is ericlegal@equanim.com, that's ekwanim.com, and he also has a website for his coaching business, which you can find at www.equanim.com. I'm Paul Gisby of Talking Leaders. We help leaders get heard, be understood, and build trust. Thanks for listening.